P.S. I Love Hoffman is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things Cage Club related, head on over to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
Iggy Pop! Amen! Let it rock!
I'm a fucking idiot.
Red meat, we crave sustenance.
I'm an artist.
Hello, my name is Jimmy Cooley.
It's fun to have some fun.
Tommy,
it's a tape thing.
Whoever she is, I'm going to find her and I'm going to hurt her.
I've spent the past 3 years learning Finnish.
I'm always home. I'm uncool.
This is a process of dehypnotization.
Shut up!
Need a little bit of water.
Hey, Hoff fans. Welcome to P.S. I Still Love Hoffman. Our love letter to the remarkable career of the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman. I'm still Brian Rodriguez.
And I'm still Kyle Reinfried.
We're always home, we're always uncool, we're always ready to talk all things Philip Seymour Hoffman and beyond. How you been, Kyle? How's it been going?
I've been doing pretty darn good. You know, I've been just, all around in life and in the podcast world, so not really, you know, besides just everyday complaints, no real complaints here, so.
And do you know what today is?
Today is the 12th of March.
No, the release date, Kyle. Maintain the illusion.
The illusion. Yeah, this is live right now. Remember the 15th of March.
Yes.
The 5th of November.
The Ides of March. And how appropriate that our March 1st rewatch was The Ides of March. Hope you guys enjoyed it. I'm sure you listened to it. You know, it was an interesting rewatch. It was fun, and now we're like getting into kind of the early whispers of the political season. I'm sure next March we're going to be already so sick of the elections here, so, you know.
No, I'm always sick of them. I'm a complete ostrich when it comes to that stuff.
I thought you were going to say I'm a complete Austrian. I'm like, huh. I'm not sure what that means. But anyway, you can check out the Ides of March right here where you're listening to us, whatever platform you happen to be on. But just a reminder, those are rewatches, so you pop in the DVD. We do commentary on it. We have a good time. And these 15ths of the month, these mid-month ones, were just time to chat, and I guess time to announce which film we'll be talking about for next month's episode.
Yes.
But before we get into that, you know, we like to discuss some Hoffman news always. We like to keep the PSH man in our hearts and minds always.
Of course.
And before we got on air, you reminded me, because this is something I like to forget. Like you said, you like to be an ostrich about the politics. I lately like to be an ostrich about the Oscars, but
The award season in general.
Someone's like, oh, did you see the Golden Globes? And I'm like, no, I did not see the Golden Globes. It just makes me mad. But
I like seeing them every once in a while because I like seeing my actors getting all liquored up.
Fair. That's the most exciting one when it comes to like watching the crowd.
Yeah.
But the Oscars came up, and we have to acknowledge them because, of course, our main man, Philip Seymour Hoffman, was an Oscar winner. A multiple-time nominee. So, Kyle, what were your thoughts on the Oscars this year, and how do you think that relates to the legacy of Philip Seymour Hoffman?
Well, so my favorite band of all time is Queen. Rami Malek, I believe is the proper way to pronounce his name.
Mr. Robot.
Mr. Robot won Best Actor. He's one of the youngest actors to have won Best Actor, believe it or not.
Hmm.
So he won playing the role of the real-life rock singer Freddie Mercury. So something in common with our main man, how he won for the real-life author, Truman Capote. And, I mean, in my opinion, Philip Seymour Hoffman playing Capote versus Rami playing Freddie, I think PSH wins it in any kind of bout, if you'd like to say. But I wasn't a big... And Capote overall is just a so much better movie than Bohemian Rhapsody. I just had a lot of... We saw Bohemian Rhapsody together. And I'm not... I mean, I've been in heated moments saying, like, it's a garbage movie. It's not a garbage movie. It's just, it's, you can see, like, it won Best Editing, and then people just right away were showing this one scene when they first meet up with their new manager, and just, like, how sloppy it was edited. It was just, it became a fan favorite because Queen is just one of the greatest, if not the greatest, rock band of all time, and people fell in love with the music. But if you're that in love with the music, I say just watch the live performances, watch the real Live Aid versus the last 10-15 minutes of Bohemian Rhapsody. So, clearly I'm a bit bitter. You know, I mean, you had also had, speaking of another real life figure, you had Christian Bale nominated for the role of Dick Cheney, and he was just, he, both him and Rami transformed, but I just think that it's like Christian Bale should have won maybe over him, but yeah, it's nothing against Rami. I'm more against the movie and Brian May and Roger Taylor, the two members of Queen, for making a PG-13 glossy version of their band and their life.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree with you on a lot of what you're saying. It feels like, certainly, and look, we probably sound like crotchety old men when we say this, but it feels like when Hoffman was winning Oscars, it was less about popularity and more about, like, performance.
Yeah, I mean, that same year you had, then, I mean, I want, you had, Joaquin Phoenix for Johnny Cash. There's another, you know, real life figure and a musician to bow. And those movies were just, those showed, like, the gritty side. Like, Queen, like, you know, the Bohemian Rhapsody. Just, I mean, the fact that it's freaking called Bohemian Rhapsody. Clearly, they're just going after the panache that comes with their band. Like, the most popular song of their band. I love that song. I sing it all the time at karaoke. But that doesn't mean that the story, the movie about them, or the story really about Freddie Mercury should be called Bohemian Rhapsody. That doesn't make sense for him. We talked about that plan. It should be called Killer Queen, or a lyric like Mr. Fahrenheit. I don't know. Just, that's way better than Bohemian Rhapsody. If you know, like, what Bohemian, like, it's, I don't know. It just doesn't make sense towards his life.
Well, here's my problem, and I think you'll agree. I liked Bohemian Rhapsody. It was a fun movie. But I think that the surviving members of Queen made a choice. Do we want to make an art kind of picture that's,
well,
like,
two of the surviving members. Okay, John Deacon really doesn't want anything to do with anything.
Fair, okay.
Although I read he made like $75 million from this movie, so kudos, John.
Good for
Deacon.
Him. Good for him.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Deacon John, as he's known sometimes.
Deaky. or Timmy from Jurassic Park, who played him.
Yeah. Gala Minus. I love doing that. Or God bless you.
Yeah.
Those are Jurassic Park fun times. But yes, I feel like they definitely made a choice. Like, do we make this art house, like, dark, gritty film? Or do we make the pop film that's going to touch more people and make a lot of money? You know? And I think they chose, let's do the more poppy, broad appeal film. And I don't blame them for that. That's their choice. And they made a lot of money, as you decided right there. But then why are they also getting rewarded for the art aspect of it? When, like, I feel like that was not the choice. Like, maybe you don't always have to make that compromise. Sure, there are films that do both. But I feel like they definitely made that choice. Like, let's make a movie for the masses. And then they get awarded, like, an art piece.
But also, Queen made music, as much as the movie is correct that they're a band of, you know, like, almost like the island of misfit toys, and they're all different and they attract different things, but they were a band that created music for the masses and created some of the biggest hits and rock anthems of all time. But at the same time, the movie shows them, at least for, like, their first album up through A Night at the Opera with Bohemian Rhapsody, which I believe is their fourth album, being very creative. You know what? They make a creative movie. Tell it to me in a creative way. Don't go back to this biopic, just standard storytelling that they made fun of in John C. Reilly's Walk Hard, you know?
Like, and I'm so sick of the musical biopic. I'm so sick of it. There's like an Elton John one coming out now.
And that, at least, that I saw the trailer, and I mean, trailers are obviously for marketing and getting you in the seat, but that looks, there's just certain shots in it that I'm like, oh, they're just, I don't know, going with some artistic, interesting stuff. And the one thing about that, that's the same, the director that ended up finishing Bohemian Rhapsody because of the,
I didn't know that.
He's the director of the Elton John.
Look, I love Elton John, and I'm happy that you're saying these things. But does every artist deserve to get one? I heard Alice Cooper the other day signed a deal to make one. Like, what, you know? I feel like this has been happening on Broadway a little bit longer. And now, but, you know, this has been happening forever. I love Coal Miner's Daughter, you know? It's just one of the biggest genres in film is not just biopic. It's musical biopic.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And I mean, and then just going back to that year that Philip Seymour Hoffman won, you also had David, I always can't, Strathairn?
I don't know.
You know, he was for Good Night and Good Luck, Edward R. Murrow.
Okay.
So just, I mean, just even that year, you had three guys nominated, you know, three of the five guys nominated are for real life figures. And I mean, what, this year you had, you even had, yeah, you had four, right? Because I think the guy, because Viggo Mortensen, the guy from Green Book, that's supposed to be a real guy, right?
Oh, is it? I do not follow.
I'm pretty sure.
At all.
I mean, but even then, you had Christian Bale and for Dick Cheney, and you had Willem Dafoe, Vincent Van Gogh. So
gotcha.
I don't know. And Bradley Cooper, just as, I mean, the fictional character, but Jackson Maine, and like I said, Viggo Mortensen for that movie Green Book. So I don't know. I didn't see all those movies, but I just think Christian Bale, Dick Cheney, I don't know. Yeah, sour grapes.
I don't know. Whatever. So many people were disappointed with that film, though. Did you see it?
Yeah, I mean, so that's what I'm saying. Like, it doesn't even, you know, so Bohemian Rhapsody wasn't a great film, and neither was, Vice.
Vice, yeah.
But I don't know, I just still thought that he did a really good job. I mean, you can, he was definitely more transformed by makeup. I mean, you know, you had Rami growing a mustache and then putting in the fake teeth. And he did, you know, from watching a lot of Queen documentaries and live performances, he did embody a lot of what, you know, who Freddie was and just his mannerisms. So he did do a good job. I don't know. It's just, I guess it's just more, I just feel that way also because it just really had a distaste for, in the end, the movie.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't mind him winning, honestly. I did think he did a great job. It just definitely feels like different than when Hoffman was winning.
Yeah, and I will say this. I was very upset. He like alluded to him, but by saying, you know, the story is about, you know, a gay man, but he didn't say Freddie Mercury's name in his speech. Which, just as a Freddie Mercury and Queen fan, just kind of rubbed me the wrong way. But anyway, I don't want to, this is about, so, you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman back at the Oscars in 2005 when he won? Yeah, 2005. And so, I mean, it's been 14 years and he's just still, just from his speech and just from that performance. And like you said, back then it wasn't like a pop competition. It just seems, you know, I don't know.
You say that, and I totally, totally understand. But while you were speaking, I was like, let me look up what Philip Seymour Hoffman's Oscar speech was. And I'm not even sure. I'm reading this cold. But
he thanked his mom.
I want to see if he thanks Truman Capote, because then, we might have a little controversy here. Wow, I'm in a category with some great, great, great actors, fantastic actors. And I'm overwhelmed. I'm really overwhelmed. I'd like to thank Bill Vince and Caroline Barron and Danny Rossett The film wouldn't have happened without them. I'd like to thank Sarah Fargo. I'd like to thank Sarah Murphy. I'd like to thank Emily Ziff. My friends, I'd like to thank Bennett Miller and Danny Futterman. Shout out Birdcage. Okay, he didn't say that, but we've been talking about the Birdcage a lot. Who I love, I love, I love, I love. So appreciative. What an appreciative man. You know the Van Morrison song, I Love, I Love, I Love, and he keeps repeating it like that. And I'd like to thank Tom Bernard and Michael Barker. Thank you so much. And my mom's name is Marilyn O'Connor, and she's here tonight. And I'd like if you see her tonight to congratulate her, because she brought up 4 kids alone, and she deserves a congratulations for that. Ah, we're at the party, Ma, you know? Sorry. Obviously, this is out of context. And she took me to my first play, and she stayed up with me and watched the NCAA Final Four and my passions, and her passions became my passions. And you know, be proud, Mom, because I'm proud of you, and we're here tonight, and it's so good, thank you. Beautiful speech. And I love how he thanked
his
mother.
Yes.
But he didn't
thank Truman Capote, yeah. Okay. But yeah, but okay. But yeah, I mean, I will fully admit, I have much more of an attachment to Freddie Mercury than Truman Capote. But
fair.
Sure. Okay. So yeah, if we're going
to... He didn't even say, this is dedicated to a gay man, you know?
No.
Because he also played a gay man.
This is true.
Interesting.
Yeah.
No, but honestly, great speech. I think we got our best thank you ever, though, last year in Sam Rockwell's speech.
Ah, yes.
Where he actually thanked Philip Zimmer Hoffman. So we didn't get that this year. There wasn't too many Hoffman mentions, unfortunately. But whenever you go through, like, montages of Oscar winners, they were running a lot of those, you saw Hoffman in there, and... It's funny because they liked the show that year. I think it was for Doubt that he was nominated and he wore like the head thing.
Yeah.
Like the bandana.
Like the beanie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like, I think it was a bandana. I don't know. It was like a black. They liked to show that image of him. That's, I kind of think of that with him in the Oscars and not so much the year he won. Speaking of biopics, I wrote this down just to briefly talk about. I like to find, and I challenge you to do it as well, but I know you do it too. I like to find films that I'm like, if Hoffman were alive, he would do great at this. And one recently that came out was a film The Rock produced. You know I'm a wrestling fan. But it's called Fighting With My Family, and it's a biopic about the real wrestler Paige and her story. Stephen Merchant directed. And there's,
yeah.
I think you've seen the trailer probably. But
Nick Frost plays her dad.
Yeah, Nick Frost plays her dad. But in the Vince Vaughn role, I could have totally seen Hoffman. He's like kind of like the wrestling scout and like a little bit of a mentor.
Yeah.
And he plays...
That would have been... Yeah, I like that.
And he plays it in like an understated way. We know Hoffman was a big sports fan. We know he was like a high school wrestler. I think he was like too old to actually play a wrestler at this point, theoretically, you know? Mm-hmm. Obviously, we're doing hypothetical. But I would have loved to seen him like as like a kind of scout slash former wrestler, you know? And I just thought that was just like a quick thing. I'm like, I could see Hoffman doing that.
I could definitely see him in a role. Besides these, I'm trying to think of other movies that have been...
Well, when they come up, you'll remember, I'm sure.
I'll remember,
We're doing this every month.
Exactly.
Now, before we announce, the winners of our big Hoffman vote for what will be the April 1st film... I did make another note of something to discuss, and it was an interview with Anna Paquin, and I read it on Entertainment Weekly, but it seems like it was also on People magazine. Maybe they're affiliated.
Oh, okay.
I'm not too sure.
Yeah.
It was People's TV or People TV. Like it was a, how they transcribe their like video interviews.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And she was saying how, like, one of her goals as a child was to work with Spike Lee. And she got to do that on 25th Hour with Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah,
with Philip Seymour Hoffman. And
Spike Lee also nominated this year for Best Actor.
Yeah, and I think that's
best
how
director,
the...
Best Director.
Yeah, Best Director. And I think Best Actor, do the right thing like that, Spike Lee.
Exactly. Mookie.
No, and she mentions also working with Hoffman so young and so in awe, but she's... And I thought this fact was kind of funny. She said the weirdest thing was she kept looking at Hoffman for direction instead of Spike Lee, because her first, like, serious stage role was in a play directed by Hoffman, when she was even younger than that.
Oh.
So on set, she was so used to, like, looking to Hoffman for direction that, like, in the scene, she would ask him instead of Spike Lee, which I thought was funny. I always like to hear, like, little Hoffman stories.
I wonder if Hoffman
like
suggested her to Spike Lee.
Oh, maybe. You know.
Like, if he was attached to the project earlier than she was.
And, of course, he plays, like, her teacher, and it gets weird, but...
Yes.
You know, that's a movie I hadn't seen or I wasn't too familiar with until we did the podcast, and I saw and I really, really liked, and that's when I could not wait to watch again.
Yes, definitely something we'll give for you guys to vote on eventually. Maybe that'll be for back to school. Who knows?
Possibly. I mean, it could have been... Well, let's see. We sprang forward. So did we lose an hour?
Yeah.
So maybe for like the other daylight savings.
Yeah, where we gain an hour for the
yeah.
hour.
That, what a lame tie-in. But you know what?
Yeah, exactly.
you never know. Any other Hoffman things you want to share before we
no,
do the vote?
I think let's just let these guys know how their voting went.
So, of course, we had two films on the ballot. And just a refresher, the first one was Moneyball. And Kyle, in a couple sentences, why did we pick Moneyball?
Well, Moneyball, because this is the film for April, and April, of course, is the beginning of baseball. And so, yeah, and it's just a fantastic role of his, actually. What was that, the second collaboration with Bennett Miller?
Oh, yeah, we just mentioned Bennett Miller, the director of Capote, of course.
Director of Capote. A small role, but just somewhere that, like, you can... Yet again, I mean, this is after he won an Oscar and is, you know, a household name, and he is top billed in it, but a smaller role, another real life figure. But you get to appreciate him and what he can do with just a, you know, run of the mill kind of role that you just get to see a master of his craft at his work.
Yeah. And we mentioned Dan Futterman's name before in the speech, so just a refresher, Bennett Miller, Dan Futterman, and Philip Seymour Hoffman are, like, childhood friends. They went to, like, theater camps together. You know what I was thinking of, though? Well, as you mentioned that, I've been watching the new trailers for that show, Brockmire, with Hank Azaria.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, I'm not caught up on that show, but it seems like a show I'd really, really enjoy. I definitely want to check it out, but apparently he got, like, promoted.
On IFC, right?
Yeah, IFC. Apparently he got promoted to be Oakland's announcer, and it's not really the A's, but, you know, it's, like, supposed to be the Oakland A's.
Sure.
So, and, you know, and this movie is about the A's, but you know what I was thinking about? Dan Futterman is in the Birdcage with Hank Azaria,
yeah.
And he's mostly naked. And they don't share a scene, but Philip Seymour Hoffman is in Along Came Polly, and Hank Azaria is mostly naked in that film, too.
I think Hank Azaria is just mostly
probably.
We'll see if he's in the Mad About You.
That's gonna be interesting.
With his ex-wife.
And the other film that was on the ballot this month was State and Maine.
Yeah, which is just, we had Moneyball and the smaller role of Art Howe after Philip Seymour Hoffman is very established and an Academy Award winning actor. And then you have State and Maine, one of his first leading roles and just a fun movie in the sense that it's about the film industry. So just felt like a good film to have, you know, as the second option.
Yeah, and I think both these films are films that I'm going to look forward to watching. I think both are going to reappear on the ballot at some point. Well, The Loser, you know, will reappear on the ballot.
Yes.
So, here goes. I'm going to tally up the votes quickly, though it should be fast. So we have our winner, Kyle. Are you ready? Are you ready to find out which one won?
I am ready.
Well, get ready for, you know, the smell of fresh cut grass, the, you know, that electricity in the air. Ah, there's nothing like...
New Hampshire's like that.
No. There's nothing like the first day of baseball season.
Ah, Take me out to the ball game.
Our winner is Moneyball. So April 1st will be the first day of our baseball season, because that'll be our commentary and rewatch. You guys definitely want to check it out. I'm going to have fun rewatching that film. You know I love that film. I know you really like that film too. Like you said, not a big Hoffman role, but an important Hoffman role. And
it's just very interesting, because as I said in the rewatch of Ides of March, Brad Pitt was almost Philip Seymour Hoffman's role in that. So now we get Brad Pitt in Moneyball.
So good, so good. And these films kind of came out back to back, so I suppose it's appropriate. Ides of March and Moneyball. So I suppose it's appropriate that we kind of do them back to back here.
Yeah, I like it. I'm into it. Good job, Hoffman.
So April 1st. And don't worry, State and Maine fans, like I kind of alluded to, we're going to put that back on the ballot soon.
You really knocked that one out of the park.
Okay. So, Kyle, it's been, as you mentioned kind of at the beginning of the podcast, it's been a big month for foodie films. And this week you had a pretty awesome guest and a pretty awesome episode. Why don't you tell the Hoff fans about it, just in case they're not foodie fans too, which is, would be really, really stupid. But just in case,
well,
let them know.
So I hope you guys are supporting and listening and have moved from not just being Hoff fans, but you also are foodie fans. And what do you have a name for your listeners? Slumberers?
Yeah, I say Slumberers.
Slumbers. But yes, so Foodie Films has been, I've got some exciting stuff happening. As I've said before, we have a YouTube channel, and so definitely check out our most recent video where we visited LaFrieda Meat Purveyors, and Pat LaFrieda Jr. gave me a tour, an unexpected tour, so I've been filming these with my iPhone. Yeah, does the trick, but hopefully we can start producing with some better cameras, getting you some video content. But as Brian said, a very, very special episode came out this past Wednesday. What date would that be? That would be the it was this past Wednesday. You're listening. It was this past Wednesday. And so I had Pat LaFrieda Jr., the man that gave me the tour, and he is the CEO of LaFrieda Meat Purveyors, and it was a great episode. We didn't do the traditional my episode style where we start off by talking food in general, highlight a food-centric movie, a famous food scene, and then the gut instinct segment. I just wanted to ask him so many questions. We just had such a great conversation. And then we did talk to famous food scenes, so you'll have to listen to the episode to find out those, but one's like a serious one, one's a silly one, and just overall, it was a great episode where I'm really digging talking to people in general, like all my guests on Foodie Films, but these guys that are professionals in the food industry, they're just shining a light and just helping me learn more, and obviously I would think the listeners more as well, and that's really what I talked to Pat about. I wanted to hear just his whole vast knowledge on it all and misconceptions, and that's what I really want Foodie Films to turn into. I want it to become a place where if you want to learn about food, and obviously I love film, so how it is highlighted in film as well, like this is the place you come for it. So it's just been a treat, and I hope it's been a treat for you guys, and please check it out. Please keep checking it out.
Pat LaFrieda is like a huge meat guy, right? Like he provides.
Yes, his company provides to over 1,500 restaurants from like all over New York City to the Midwest, all the way out to Vegas. He's
top chefs too, right?
Yes, top chefs. I mean, it's just do yourself a favor and not only, you know, after you listen to the episode, go onto his website, and they have some great like videos and articles to read and learn about their company. It's just a fantastic company, and their meat is just, I've never had any better meat before in my life. And so that was just as a fan, I wanted of his product, I wanted to talk to him, and he was such a great guy. And just, he didn't have to, you know, this is one of those things where he didn't have to come onto the podcast. He's a very busy guy, and he's just been great. And one of the future episodes, he recommended one of his best friends, a chef, and I recorded that episode already, and that's a tremendous episode. So just a lot of great things happening with Foodie Films, and I've loved every episode thus far, but these episodes, I've kind of labeled them. They're called First Cut, and then I give the guest name after the colon there. So they're just their own little special episodes that I hope to continue making those, and you guys continue listening.
Yeah, and I was, you know, we were talking off air, and pretty much if there's a Shake Shack in your town and you've eaten at Shake Shack, you've had some Pat LaFrieda meat.
Yeah, there's a great, him and Danny Meyer, the owner of Shake Shack, they became friends, and that's what Danny Meyer wanted LaFrieda meat, and it's just some interesting stuff. And actually, Brian helped me out with some questions. I was, you know, I was like, wow, I got Pat LaFrieda.
Because I had questions.
You did have questions, and you gave me multiple questions, but I specifically did a shout out to you in High School Slumber Party and made it known to Pat specifically that you were asking about how, you know, LaFrieda meets and their involvement in Citi Field, since Brian is a huge Mets fan, how that came to be. So he answers that and much, much more. So please check out the episode for all these amazing facts.
And as you said, I'm a Mets fan. I'm a baseball fan. So I'm looking forward to talking about Moneyball too. And then my other show, of course, is High School Slumber Party. We've been having a great time at the Slumber Party. And of course, High School Slumber Party is a podcast where me and some friends look back at our teenage years through the lens of some iconic high school centric films. And Kyle, of course, you've been on a bunch. You're actually on the episode for today.
Yes.
And today's episode is a film that the godfather of this podcast network himself picked as his second favorite movie of the year, and his favorite movie that didn't star a bear that enjoyed marmalade.
That was his favorite movie of the year?
Paddington 2 was his number one movie of 2018. And trust me, I love Paddington 2, but that is a ballsy pick.
Ladies, listen to... Go find that cuddly bear himself, Jerry Lewandowski, and just hibernate with him. Paddington 2.
Eat some marmalade.
His number one choice. Yeah, exactly. Smear some marmalade all over one another. Look at that. Listen to that. Listen to that. Just lovely... Lovely man, and his just, I just.
He's a man with a big heart. He's a man with a big
heart. Yeah, he's a man with a big heart. Yeah, he's, I mean, he's the godfather. He's, you know, doing right by us. And
so it's a really good movie. But again, to make that your top pick, and you like pretty much are one of the people, or if not the person who runs the podcast network of all these film podcasts, and that's your number one film. I'm not saying he's wrong, but that is a pick that's going to get people talking, you know?
Oh, yes.
But his second pick is the film I did on today's High School Slumber Party, and that's Assassination Nation. Have you seen it, Kyle?
I have not.
Some people have actually told me specifically that it's a movie that you might not enjoy, but it's a very polarizing
people
film.
Told you that I wouldn't enjoy it?
That they wouldn't be sure that you'd enjoy it, because it's a very polarizing film. I
don't know why I get talked about so
much. Because you're popular, Kyle. You're popular.
For being unpopular, I guess.
No, I think you're popular for having a strong opinion.
Yeah, for being outspoken, for being our, you know, yeah. Okay, I get it.
But it was a film that I think premiered at either Sundance or South by Southwest that did well there. It didn't make too much money in the theaters. A very in-your-face film. And it's basically... It turns into a bit of a slasher, but it's a high school film really about, like, social media. Okay, Kyle, I'll put it this way. Imagine if a hacker found everything that you've ever put on the internet and in your phone, you know?
I'd have to move.
This film is about a town where a hacker starts releasing all these people's information, and it turns into anarchy, you know?
Yeah.
It was a very uncomfortable watch, but honestly, I thought it was a very good film. But you can definitely watch that film or check it out on High School Slumber Party. But we're doing a ton of fun stuff. We got some good guests coming up. We had some good guests before. Just went to the movies with a guy you know well, Mike Manzi. We saw the film Hackers.
Oh yeah,
Alamo Draft House.
With Mike Manzi to see Captain Marvel.
Cool, very cool. We'll be talking about Hackers later this month. You can check both our shows out, though, on cageclub.me or wherever you're listening to this podcast today. So iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play. And guys, I say it on my show, Kyle, I know you say it on yours, but the best thing you can do, really, to help us out and help us spread the memory and legacy of Philip Seymour Hoffman is by rating us on iTunes, writing a review, telling a friend, interacting with us on social media. Let's make this an interactive experience, right?
I'm into it. Yeah, let's do it. Let's keep it going.
Anything else you want to say, Kyle, before we say goodbye?
No, I'm very much looking forward to talking Moneyball and for baseball season in general. So, you know what? Let's play ball. This is horrible.
Is that how we're going to end? Or let's just end the old-fashioned way, Kyle.
Bring me some peanuts and cracker. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Stay on cool. Because clearly that's what I do. Very uncool. Very uncool.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Sex a thing, you. I believe in miracles since you came.